Thursday morning. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitler. We're joined with State Representative Evan Goyke and looking ahead to the fall campaign now that we've had the primary election this week. But before we do, we were talking about the alleged investigation by Michael Gableman into the 2020 presidential election. In light of the comments made both by Voss and by Gableman, especially Gableman's robocall on behalf of Voss's opponent, saying that Voss never wanted, quote unquote, a real investigation, it prompted several of your colleagues, Evan, to ask the Legislative Audit Committee to conduct a formal audit of the Gableman operation and see if this actually, this, you know, $1.25 million or something like that of taxpayer funds has in fact been used on an investigation, or if it has been, you know, a massive waste that has not and was never intended to have a real purpose. What were your thoughts seeing that some of your colleagues asked for that audit?
Well, let me start by saying it is refreshing to hear Mr. Gableman say his investigation was not real. Let's believe him when he says he didn't actually do a real investigation. Trust the source. I think an audit is totally appropriate. Let's not keep let's not lose track of the fact that these are public funds. We're well over $1 million. The Republicans have often crowed about auditing certain programs in state government, social safety net programs, ensuring that public dollars are spent as efficiently and effectively as possible. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Let's do it. Bring out the accountants and the spreadsheets and the calculators and red markers, and let's find out what they really spent money on. And, you know, there have been some lawsuits over the lack of transparency and the lack of record keeping. I expect we will find additional problems with or violations of record retention and open meetings, and it's going to be wrought with problems, but let's get to the bottom of it. So I wholly support the audit. I think I know what the outcome of that will be, that this was a total waste of money, and it's been embarrassing. It, you know, it's a historical note in the state's history that really is just a black eye. And it is, you know, the irony of it coming back on Voss when it was his creation is just it's
poetic.
It's poetic. And let me tell you from the trenches, one of the things I can offer listeners is what it's like to be a state representative. Let me tell you, I talked to my Republican colleagues quite a bit. They weren't excited about this. This was all about appeasing a certain small fringe vocal minority of the Republican base, although larger than many people thought, you know, appeasing Trump. And lo and behold, it backfired. And it was a total mistake from the beginning. Robin Voss is a real tactful politician. He usually has things buttoned up pretty tightly. He's pretty disciplined. He's not a dumb guy. This was one of the dumbest mistakes that, you know, he has ever made in his career, and he knows it. And I think that contract with Mr. Gableman is gonna get ripped up any day now. I'd be surprised. I thought first thing Wednesday morning after Voss squeaked by was goodbye, Gableman.
I think so. Now, again, as I've speculated, what if Voss is in for a surprise and it turns out more of his caucus is actually, you know, pro Gableman, Trump, you know, what have you? I doubt it. I think Voss knows how to count the votes, but, you know, in this environment, can we ever really say?
Well, our first segment, Pat, we talked about Voss squeaking by and the amount of resources it took to keep him through to the next round. Well, if you're kind of a newer or more of a backbencher a representative, and you see that outcome, and you know you don't have $500,000 of firepower behind you, you look at that outcome and say, oh boy, I got to appease this base. I don't like Gableman, but I actually think it digs in a number of the incumbent Republicans a bit because they're very fearful of the base and of President Trump's Twitter.
So when Speaker Voss later yesterday walked back the way that he referred to Michael Gableman as an embarrassment and said, well, he was just talking about a particular facet of the investigation. I immediately tweeted out something like, well, I reset the board. We're back to just Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger as the only elected Republicans willing to tell the Trump and the Trump people to pound sand. And I think we're back at that. I think specifically here in the Senate district where I served, Kathy Bernier is the Republican serving here now and was one of those very few people willing to say, especially given that she was a former county clerk herself, she'd say in so many words, hey, you dummies, this is all made up. This is all a lie. But, you know, she's retiring. You mentioned the record number of retirements. I know that you answering this question might put the pressure on somebody, but does anybody in the Republican caucus, assembly or Senate strike you as the one who's going to be the next, you know, take over for Kathy Bernier, take over for Liz Cheney and you know, speak the truth?
No. The only real person that might actually do that would be Voss himself. But the outcome of primaries across the state on Tuesday is really a warning shot to Republicans. The losers Tuesday night were the moderate Republicans. Their primaries largely went to the right, to the conservative, right? I mean, look, you know, you can start at the Michaels vote. The attorney general vote was a little split, but if you put Jarkow and Mueller together, that block was much larger than a more traditional Eric Toney, who ended up winning because of the split vote. But then in primaries, like Pat, in your area, you know, Representative Jesse James, a former police chief, not a firebrand in the assembly. I mean, he went through to the next round, but it was close for a long time. And the, you know, more conservative, more outspoken candidate really made it very, very close with much fewer resources and less in institutional support. So I think Tuesday's outcome for Republicans down around the state, down ballot, like in the state assembly, is you better not speak out against the Gableman investigation. You better fall in line and believe the big lie and peddle it loudly.
Well, nobody has to drive far around their district across rural Wisconsin, especially without seeing, you know, still a Trump flag or some variation of it. So the symbols are very much out there. And you have a legislature that is solidly in Republican control purely by gerrymandering. If you did it just on a statewide vote total, you know, the legislature would be slightly Democratic, but the maps are rigged the way that they are. So it leads to this question as we pivot to the fall campaign. I'm not looking for an exact number because that puts, you know, pressure on certain candidates and campaigns. But I mean, how many competitive races are there really in maps like this? Are there many, or are there just a couple that you look at and say, well, there's where we could conceivably have a pickup?
Yeah, I think, Pat, you've nailed it. These new re-gerrymandered, they're actually worse gerrymandered than the last decade. Has limited the number of competitive seats. And just so, you know, one thing to note is, as I have been going door to door in my own district, which changed pretty substantially, there are a host of Wisconsinites that don't know they're in a new district, right? They don't, this will be the first election with a new number, you know, potentially a new polling place. This will be the first test run of these, of this new gerrymander. I'll break this into two populations. There are critical incumbents to retain on the Democratic side, seats in the Assembly and Senate on the shores of Lake Superior in the far north, candidates through the central Wisconsin River Valley, like Katrina Shanklin, to the west, like Steve Doyle in the Assembly. And then in your neck of the woods, Senator Jeff Smith. And so then those are kind of the retaining quality, good, strong Democrats that have districts that are more purple, and then pick up opportunities. The kind of tip of the spear has been, and I think this year will continue to be, the suburbs of Metro Milwaukee. So there's a new assembly district in the southwest corner of Milwaukee County, the 84th, where the Democratic candidate Lou Ann Bird will face off with former Milwaukee alderman Bob Donovan. You have the 5th Senate District, where the Democratic candidate Jess Katzenmeier will face off against former Representative Rob Hutton in the Western suburbs. So those are going to be very close. So there are a couple of other, you know, the South Milwaukee and Oak Creek district in the 21st Assembly, the Fox Valley in the Senate, I think, in the former Roth seat will be very, 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 very close. So there are opportunities to pick up seats, but they're not very many. And they fall into those retain the incumbents, save the governor's veto, and then some pickup opportunities around the state.
And further complicating that in every election cycle is, you know, that you're down ballot. The legislative races are down ballot. There's always something up there, you know, presidential year, a gubernatorial, this year U.S. Senate as well as gubernatorial. So it's not necessarily a fair question, but I'll ask that in by and large on legislative races in Wisconsin this year, how much of a factor do you think it will be? Just a factor of national trends, meaning Trump, you know, his supporters. How much of it is more of a state level factor, like the coattails from a Tony Evers and a Mandela Barnes, versus, you know, actual local issues that, you know, determine these races? You know, what is the strategy that candidates bring into a legislative race when you have so much noise at the top of the ticket?
Yeah, Pat, that's a great question. We don't take it personally that we're all the way down at the bottom of the ballot. We wear it as a badge of honor. Our politics on both sides of the aisle, in my opinion, have nationalized, where a tweet from a representative in Georgia or Washington or New York is, you know, becomes viral. And now I'm a Democrat, so I believe what somebody else says in a different state, or they're Republican, so they have to agree with. So it's harder to cut through the noise, but those local issues, that door knocking, the one-on-one contacts that, you know, like a legislative race really depends on, still are the bread and butter of winning elections. Door to door, talking to people, that's it.
I really have to agree with that. And I have to tip my cap to my staff, my campaign staff at the time, and my legislative staff prior to my attempt to run for reelection, was, you know, to really look and say, look, it's a big state Senate district, but in these communities, if you spend extra time knocking on doors, meeting people there, you're going to build, you know, your numbers. And the fact of the matter is, it was true in these two particular communities. I mean, I worked them hard, and we gained seats. But, you know, 2010 was also the year of the Tea Party, and so ultimately that fell short. But it just more to your point that it is still, you know, there's still grassroots politicking to be done at the local level, and not everybody, but many people still appreciate that.
Yeah, and enough people to change an election outcome. So that's the bread and butter.
Mm-hmm. We are talking with State Representative Evan Goyke about legislative races and, you know, the makeup of the legislature. And we've got less than a minute before we go to break. So probably we'll come back to this. But I can't help but note the Republicans put you and the rest of the legislature on a 10-month vacation. So what'd you do on your vacation? Are you enjoying it?
I wish we were more active. I've got lots of good ideas to solve problems, help constituents. I had a baby, or my wife had a baby, so that's been keeping me personally busy. But no, let's
you know,
talk about.
You really should have led with that, you know, because there's no vacation for you anytime soon. Evan Goyke is our guest. We'll take a break and be back with more after this. You're up north.